You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
Charlene, I feel like we haven't done this for a while. I feel like it's been forever.
It has been. I mean, chronologically, for those of us, or for those of you who are listening in real time, as these episodes are released, it's only been 2 weeks, but it feels like ages. I missed you.
Oh, I missed you too, and to the aliens listening in the future after the human race has died out, but all that is left is cockroaches and digital copies of our show, they don't have to wait, you know, because they're just going to play episode 176 and then go right into episode 177, and that's what we are doing today. We're doing episode 177. That is a lot of frickin' podcasting.
It really is. We have now done more episodes than the show did episodes itself, and we're still going, and you know what? We're doing one of our favorite things this week, but before we get to that, I just want to say, in these 2 weeks that has gone by, a lot has happened. Holy wow, dude. Okay, we have, some movie that came out. We have a name for the new show that's coming out in 2017. We have Star Trek Las Vegas coming up next week, and we are both going to be there. And we've got to mention, we are going to be doing Super Bridge Mates, competing against Andy and Jera of Women at Warp podcast. And we are going to be with our lovely folks from Earl Grey, host Philip Gilfist, and Daniel Prue and Darren Moser. This is going to be amazing!
A special Trek.fm Earl Grey event announcement for Star Trek Las Vegas. Listeners, you know Bridgemates from Earl Grey episodes 82, 109, and 141, as well as To the Journey, 117, and Standard Orbit 102. There is even the original trivia panel show Encounter at All Good Things from Earl Grey 137. So Earl Grey is proud to announce a live presentation of Super Bridgemates at the Star Trek Las Vegas 50th Anniversary Convention on Friday, August 5th, from 12:30 to 1:15 p.m. It will be held at the Roddenberry Stage at Quark's Bar at the Rio. Your favorite team here at Earl Grey of Free Enterprise will attempt to escape defeat, again, against two rival Bridgemate teams, Team Lizard Babies, Charlene Schmidt and Tristan Riddell, and the Council of Mistresses, Andy Vanderkolk and Jera Hodge. When it comes to celebrating the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, regular Bridgemates simply won't do. And that's why this game show will be Super Bridgemates, a fun-filled comedic game show involving fans, cosplayers, and audience members. Not only will the teams compete in hilarious trivia, but those in the audience will participate by acting out selected scenes from our favorite Star Trek moments, and cosplayers will help create puzzles for the teams to solve. It's all about the love of Trek. So we hope all the listeners who will be coming to Star Trek Las Vegas will join us, Earl Grey, and all your favorite co-hosts and fellow listeners for Super Bridgemates at Star Trek Las Vegas at the Roddenberry Stage.
So, okay, here's the thing, is that I am dumb, and I don't really know exactly how this is going to go. So, like, would you guys pitch this to me, like you and Philip from Earl Grey, when you guys pitch this to me, like you said, like, hey, let's do Bridgemates at Vegas. I was like, oh yeah, totally, let's do it. And I was thinking, like, we were just gonna, like, hang out in a hotel room and record ourselves doing it and then upload it online and say, like, oh hey guys, you know, we're doing a Bridgemates, but in person, and now you get to listen to it. But apparently, I'm gonna be on a panel with you guys, and there's gonna be audience members.
Yes. I don't know exactly how this happened, who made it happen exactly. I'm guessing Philip and Darren, who know a whole lot more about getting panels than I do, because I don't know Jack. They made this happen, and we're going to be on, I believe, the Roddenberry stage, doing this in front of other people. Trek FM listeners can come and see us. It's happening Friday, August 5th at 12:30. So if you want to see us, do this thing, be there, and then, of course, afterward, I'm sure we'll be around to talk and say hi.
How sad would it be if no one showed up? Like, how depressing would that be? Because for me, like, that's what I think is going to happen. Like, I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer, but I'm just like, I'm surprised that you guys want to listen to my voice anyway without actually staring me in the face at the same time. So I'm utterly humbled that you guys listen to our show every single week. And to me, I'm just like, do people really want to see me at a panel? I'm just Joe Schmo. I'm Schmucky the Clown.
Yeah, Tristan, I'm totally with you. Whenever I think about people who, like, the thousands of people who listen to this podcast every week, I'm like, really? Who gives a crap what I have to say? But people really, we got something here. And you know what it is? It's the magic between us. It does not really matter so much what I say or what you say, but collectively, what we put together, what we make this show to be, is what people tune in for. That's the one thing that has kept me going so many times. That and our listener interactions, the lovely people who let us know that, yes, they're out there and they appreciate what we do. Something clicks. I don't know the formula beyond that. Yeah. It just happens. Yeah. And so, okay, cool. But yeah, I don't think there's going to be an empty room at Star Trek Las Vegas for this panel at all. I think more people are going to show up than we even think we realize. But then you know what? If they don't, so what? They're lost, and we're going to have fun anyway.
Are we recording it? Like, are we recording the audio? Are we going to
have
mics?
Yeah, I think Darren is going to release that as an episode of Earl Grey. So if you can't make it to Vegas, you'll be able to listen to it.
That's good to know. So yes, yeah, like, everybody, note it in your calendars. Mark it down, 12:30 on Friday in Las Vegas. If you are in Las Vegas, we want you there. Come and support Team Lizard Babies.
Yeah.
Make your signs. Wear your t-shirts, chant the name so that they know who you're rooting for. But if you are way all the way out in Timbuktu or you just can't make it, then you will be able to download it. So subscribe to Earl Grey, because you should be subscribed to Earl Grey anyway.
It's true. You really should. They are our sister show. We love them.
You know what? Like, I love all the shows on the Trek FM network. I love all the shows very much. But there's just a special place in my heart for Earl Grey. And I really do think it's our sister show. I do believe that.
We've got a special bond. I don't know if an episode of Earl Grey goes by where they don't mention us. And it's not just love that they have for us. I mean, we have a very special relationship with the guys on that show. It's just we really have gotten along as friends. We talk quite a bit just in the mess hall. At random times, I think we know each other better than we know a lot of other folks. And that's not to the detriment of anybody else on the network. It's just we get each other.
Mm-hmm. And I was listening to their last episode where they're doing Essential Trek. And they started talking about the Ferengi episode where they get lost in the Delta Quadrant. And then they're like, wait, did To the Journey keep the other episode, like the Voyager episode with these Ferengis? And I was texting them, like, as I was listening, I was like, oh, well, if they're wondering, I'll just text them.
Yeah.
And I was typing on my phone, and then all of a sudden, I hear my own voice come out of the speakers.
Was that not amazing? I was flabbergasted that they went to the effort to actually look that up and find the clip and put it in there. That's love. And no other show, I to my knowledge, has done that.
And they had to have done that live while they were recording, because they didn't like say like, okay, well, we'll pop it in and you guys, the audience will find out, but we don't. We're like, no, they stopped. They found the clip, put it in there, listened to it, and then said, oh, okay. So it looks like they kept it.
That's some serious love and dedication right there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Earl Grey, guys, keep up the good work. We love you so very much. The feeling is mutual. And we're sorry that we had to make you look up false prophets and determine your essential trek based on our input.
Well, Essential Trek is not what we're talking about today. What we're talking about today is an episode rewrite. This is one of my favorite things to do. You know what? No, screw that. I'm holding off on right now. I want to talk Star Trek Discovery with you. We need to talk about this.
Someday we'll start the rewrite, but you know what? Here's the thing, though, is we have so many plates spinning in the Star Trek world right now. It's almost overwhelming because we have not had this much new Star Trek to talk about in, at least 11 years.
Yeah, yeah, it's been ridiculous. And so I want to know, we got the logo, we got the name of the ship, the name of the show, and we actually got the ship itself. Now,
yes,
we also found out that this was rushed for Comic-Con.
Well, yeah, they threw it together because they had to get something done. So be it.
So be it. What do you... Okay, so... But the thing is, though, is even though it was rushed, it's still going to look vaguely like that. You know, like it's the, even if it's not the final design or the final, you know, like texture or whatever, it's still going to kind of look like that. It's, they basically stole the design from... a concept art from, is it Ralph McQuarrie, the same Star Wars guy? Like, or is it?
I'm not sure of the name. You know who would know would be Aaron Harvey, who loves Star Trek in the 70s. Go listen to Saturday Morning Trek. But essentially, it was a concept design, I think, from either Phase 2 or the motion picture. Don't quote me on it. Ask Aaron. Tweet him at Geek Filter. He'll tell you. But it was a concept that was done a long time ago. And also, if you look at it, it represents the Delta Shield. That's pretty clever.
Yeah, no, I just looked it up. It is Ralph McQuarrie.
Okay, thank you.
And it was for a Star Trek Planet of the Titans, an aborted Star Trek movie in development for 2 years before the motion picture came out.
Okay, there we go.
I personally do not like this design.
Okay, why?
But that's okay. But that's okay because I don't have to. Like I don't have to love it. I don't have to like it because this in no way, shape, or form detracts from the show for me. Like I am still super stoked. I think Discovery is a great name.
Totally.
And it looks like it's going to be in the Prime universe, so I'm super excited about that.
I believe that's been confirmed. It is.
Now, but the thing is though, it's NCC 1031.
Mm-hmm.
That means it's probably going to be like, it's not going to be post-Nemesis. Like the design doesn't look post-Nemesis. And
no.
I was really hoping we would get back to a post-Nemesis world, but c'est la vie. But the design just, it just looks like a fan design. You know, I don't know.
You know what? I am trying to reserve judgment because if I'm just looking at the ship, I think it's kind of ugly. However, I am also intrigued because it looks like a strange mashup between a later NX, like a Enterprise-esque type of ship, and a Klingon cruiser. For like, say, from the motion picture. And I'm wondering, what is that about? Now, it could have something to do with the time period. It could have something to do with what's going to happen in terms of the plot and storyline. We don't know yet, which is why I'm trying not to judge just based on appearances. And so once we learn more, maybe it'll make a lot more sense. And the design, once it does make sense, won't seem, I don't know, maybe so jarring compared to maybe what we had in our head for expectations. Because I think a lot of people were like, huh?
Well, Brian Fuller also said that they were looking at sports car designs for inspiration on the ship design. And I'm thinking, like Matt Hansen and I on the Senate floor, we talked about this where we're like, oh, if he's looking at sports cars, then obviously it's going to be sleek and sexy. And so it's going to be post-Nemesis because the Nemesis era ships are very sleek, very sexy. The first contact era ships. Uh-huh. And if you look at the motion picture and the Excelsior and, you know, the Enterprise A and everything like that, not sleek and sexy, in my opinion.
Not in the same way, no.
Not in the same way, exactly. Not like a sports car is sleek and sexy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you think aerodynamic and compact in a way.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Tight, together, smooth, kind of like the Dauntless. You know, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah,
you know, like something
yeah.
like uh-huh. the Dauntless.
I caught you drift, yeah.
But, yeah, and so then they come out with this, and I'm like, dude, Brian, why'd you say that? But, again, please, guys, don't berate me for not liking the ship design immediately because I am so utterly excited. I think there cannot be this is not going to be a simple TNG in a different era. It's not going to be just, there's going to be a hook. There's going to be something clever because Brian Fuller is clever.
Yes. Oh, he's a very smart guy and a very devoted Star Trek fan. We could not be in better hands. I know I've said that before, but I'm going to be saying it a whole lot more.
Yeah. And so it to me, I'm just like, whatever. Okay. I don't care what the logo design looks like. I don't care what the ship design looks like. I am excited that we're getting a new show that I know is going to be different and unique and fun.
Very much so. And you know what? I feel like we have to trust in this process that we're going to get a really amazing Star Trek show. We do not know anything still.
No.
We just don't. So at this point, we just have to go with it. And that's okay. We're going to learn soon enough. January is going to, if this summer is any indication, January is going to hit us like nothing flat. And then we're going to find out, and it's going to be so incredibly exciting. And so guys, it's new Star Trek. It's new Star Trek.
Speaking of new Star Trek, did you see Star Trek Beyond?
Of course I did. I have unfortunately only seen it once. I have intended to see it more, but with moving and into my new quarters and my job and whatnot, I've seen it once. I pulled a page out of your book, which I mentioned to you in the mess hall. I went to go see a really early showing because I had to go before work and saw Star Trek Beyond. And I'll just say I really liked it. I do want to see it again. And you know what? This is also spoiler-free. But to make a Voyager hook here, there's a couple of really cool nods to just about every aspect of the franchise, but also Voyager. And so if you've not seen the movie yet and you love Voyager, go look for those.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's Voyager nods.
Yes. Subtle, but they're there.
Okay. You're going to have to explain that one to me off air because I do not remember that whatsoever in the movie.
I'm thinking of two, and I'll tell you when we're done.
Okay, all right. Well, I liked it. I thought it was good. If you want to hear all of my thoughts about it, you can go to thenerdparty.com and listen to the latest episode of Nerd Nuptial, and it's called The Frontier Done Pushed Back. So there you go. Listeners,
there we
if
go.
You want to hear that.
All right. Yeah, and so this is not a Star Trek Beyond podcast. I don't want to go on any further than that because we have a rewrite to take care of now, and we're 15 minutes into our show.
Let's start the show.
Yeah.
All right. So we're doing an episode rewrite. What we're rewriting is episode Time and Again. And it aired January 30th, 1995. It is the fourth episode of the series in season one. And this is how Memory Alpha describes it in one sentence. While investigating a massive explosion that destroyed all life on a planet, Janeway and Paris are swept back a day in time where they must prevent the explosion. And they had lizard babies. Oh, wait.
No, wrong episode.
Oh, that's a different episode. Sorry, guys. Sorry. Okay. So as we rewrite, as we come up with ideas, like this is not an episode on the fly. We're not coming up with a brand new idea with new characters or a new storyline or anything like that. This is us recognizing that this episode had some, had a good premise, maybe some deficiencies, but we're going to tweak it. We're going to punch it up. And I'm aching, I'm begging to know what you came up with, Char.
Okay. Well, this was an interesting one. When you brought up the episode, because this was your idea, I thought this is a perfect candidate because I'm not a huge fan of this episode. I think it's just okay. But for the fourth episode of the first season, it's really mediocre. It feels like a leftover TNG script that they just reworked to fit the Voyager characters. And I thought what I could do here for my rewrite is let's give it some significance and more meaning. I mean, the events themselves are okay, but we need to make this more important than it is. And the way I thought of doing that was with Kes. We make an incredible discovery here where her telepathic powers awaken. So my initial thought is, we need to take that and run with it. So instead of Janeway and Paris floating through time, I would make Kes the hero. And she's the one who's going to do this because of her developing telepathic connection. She is going to sense something on this planet and insist that she can go down with the away team. And because of the telepathic powers, she's the one who's going to get swept away instead of Janeway and Paris. And so this is going to be she's going to have to figure out the mystery. And I don't feel like this is out of line, because even though we know, even though we don't know tons about Kes at this point, we do know from Caretaker that she is an independent, highly intelligent spirit. She will figure this out. I don't think that's to any detriment whatsoever. Now, here's the thing. In order to make this happen, we have to reorganize just a little bit. We have that great scene in sickbay where she and Neelix are talking with the doctor and he has no medical records. She's the finest member of her species that he's ever seen, because she's the only member that he's ever seen. Janeway and Paris disappear before that scene happens. So what we have to do is rework a little bit where maybe she wakes up and she senses some danger or something. She immediately goes to the bridge. Captain, what is going on? And so she goes to the doctor straight away with Neelix and says, what is going on with my head? And it's revealed, telepathic awakening. This might not be such an unusual thing for your species, la la la. Okay, great. She insists on going down with the away team to sense. I mean, she's feeling very compelled, just like she does in the episode. And then she's the one who's swept away. That leaves Janeway and Paris elsewhere, obviously. Janeway is going to science with B'Elanna and Harry to figure out the technobabble, blah, 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 blah. I unfortunately didn't see a way out of that. So, unfortunately, I think we're going to have to keep it. And then Kes is going to kind of do her thing on the planet where she's figuring out the polaric radiation stuff. Whatever it is. It's the nuclear disaster that's going to happen. This is the Chernobyl metaphor, right? So anyway, yeah, Janeway is going to be back on the ship, sciencing. And then the one thing I want to give Janeway to do as the leader is I want her to realize the paradox when they are making the subspace fractures and trying to get Kes back. Make her realize that it's like when Kes is going to be firing back, just like Janeway did in the episode, Janeway is also going to realize what's happening, and she'll make the call, overload that generator so that everything resets. And then that's her moment to be the brain. So she and Kes are figuring it out at the same time. But this, the reason why I want to do this is because it gives Kes a lot more development. We learn a lot more of what she's made of, and we're putting her telepathic powers to use right away. Because if we're going to do this, let's freaking do it. So, I mean, I'm painting the broad strokes here. I don't have intimate details. I'm basically reorganizing it so that Kes is the centerfold of the story. And I want to keep the teaser and the closer with Paris and Harry talking about the Delaney sisters. I think that's cute. It's a great bookend. And then everything else is just mostly the same story, just giving Kes a lot better to do. And while we're at it, let's not make Neelix annoying, because he's annoying in this episode.
Yeah.
And one small other change. Let's please do something different with the weird candy corn tunics. Can we do something else, please?
Oh, my God. And everybody's wearing the same exact color scheme. And oh, my God.
No. Bad color palette. Mm-mm.
Like, stop that. Come on. You know, is Robert Blackman, right?
He was the costume designer.
Fourth episode in the first season, and this is what you come up with?
Dude, you've done better.
Dude. Yes. That's the thing. That's it. Like, this is not me dissing on Blackman, because the man's a genius. The man knows what he's doing.
Here's the thing is, we know he can do a lot better.
Yeah, exactly.
Was he on vacation this week? Was the understudy or a really bitter intern doing this? I mean, this is not the best work. So let's please do something, maybe anything else.
Pretty much anything.
Just about anything else. But anyway, okay, so those are the broad strokes of my rewrite. Do you have any feedback or questions? This is not the most formulated rewrite I've ever come up with.
I was going to say, I didn't want to be mean, but yeah, this is the most broad strokes rewrite you've ever had.
I'm aware, and a lot of it is because I want to keep a lot of the same things, like the message about, is nuclear power safe or whatnot, blah, blah, blah. More or less, I just want to develop Kes more. And if I were writing this script, I would just portray her as the curious and intelligent person that she is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess... I'd love for you to elaborate a little bit more about how her telepathic abilities play into it. Like, give us a few moments where she really shines with her telepathic abilities.
Well, I think one thing that I would do a little differently is I think I would start off the scene where she wakes up and just stands up in bed and, oh my gosh, I would want to see that vision a little more. And I want to see her telepathic experience more. So say when that first time when Paris gets caught into the subspace glacier, I'm going to call it, and then he's pulled back, I want Kes to be having visions of things. And, of course, nobody else can see it because she's the only one who can tap into it. But I want to see what she sees.
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely portray the telepathy a lot more. And I would do it through her vision, her eyes, or her mind, if you will. And then in terms of that, I want to maybe see the process of this a little more, where she's learning to tap into it a little more consciously. So it's not just coming to her. I want her to start flexing the muscles of actually consciously engaging in the act,
mm-hmm.
if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does.
So maybe when she is a hostage to, I don't know what you would call them, the protesters? Because they're not terrorists, are they? I don't know. I feel like that's such an overused word in our culture anymore.
Yeah.
I'm going to call them the protesters. Maybe she sends them a telepathic vision of what she sees with the destruction of the planet,
mm-hmm.
to maybe help them wake up a little bit and things of that nature.
Okay. All right.
And then also I think that makes it just a little more visually interesting too, because one thing I am doing story structure wise is I am taking out a little bit of back and forth, which is very typical of a story. You cut from Janeway to Paris in the original episode, and then you've got kind of the subplot with Kes, and I'm taking that away. I realize I'm doing that. But that's what I want to do. So there.
You're like, so there, that's what I want to do.
I'm going to make this all about Kes. All of it. So, yeah, again, very broad strokes. I didn't go into tremendous detail just because I feel like you can plug Kes into this script, give her a little more interesting things to do, and yet, by and large, it's still very much the same. So that's why. If you think that sucks, I'm sorry.
No, really.
I mean, that's just it. So that all said, if you have nothing further to add, I really want to know what you came up with, because I bet it's better.
Well, I focused on Kes too.
Did you?
Yeah,
I did. It's kind of an obvious route to go, isn't it?
It really is, because she's the most interesting thing about this. You know, like
Janeway
and Paris are just kind of thrown into it, but Kes has something going on.
Exactly. That's why I felt it was necessary to capitalize on that. That's the best part of this story by far.
Now, with my version, it's loosely a rewrite. It is very much you take a kernel of an idea of Time and Again and then create it into something completely different, like.
Okay, so you are really going to just slash a lot of this.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Like, it's going to be unrecognizable when I'm done.
Okay. Demolish, please.
All right. So here's the thing, is that we open up with Kes going about her day. And then she goes to bed at night. And it's just kind of like a day in the life of Kes, you know, at the beginning.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like, it starts out kind of like Data's day, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, Kes goes to the Aeroponics Bay. She's, you know, she says hi to Neelix. She talks to the captain, whatever. And she has an exhausting day from a long day in sick bay. And then she goes to bed. And right when she falls asleep, right when she closes her eyes, she wakes up in a desert wasteland. And
okay.
For a second, she thinks she's back on Ocampa.
Oh, okay.
And then she quickly realizes that it's not Ocampa because the terrain is very different. And then she goes outside and she's in desert gear. Like she has her face wrapped. No skin is exposed. And she walks outside and it's just a decimated city. We're talking like just ruins of a city. It, like nuclear apocalypse kind of thing.
Okay.
and she's wearing goggles. She has her face covered and everything like that. And so, you know, we don't know what's going on. But then all of a sudden, we see raiders coming out of the distance. Mad Max Fury Road kind of raiders, like coming at Kes. She has no idea what to do. She's freaking out. Then out of nowhere, B'Elanna swings by with her own kind of desert vehicle and screams for her to get in. And then she rides off, and then she wakes up.
Okay. I'm intrigued. What is going on?
Yeah, and that's the teaser. And so she wakes up, and then, you know, like, beep, 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 beep. And so we go to commercial, and we come back, and she goes about her day. She goes about her day again, and it's just a normal kind of day. And she starts talking to people. She starts talking to the doctor because she was late, you know, in the morning. And the doc's like, where were you? You're never late. And she says, I had the weirdest dream. You know, I had the strangest dream. And she starts describing it. And then she sees B'Elanna in the mess hall. And she just keeps looking at B'Elanna funny. And B'Elanna finally goes like, what? Like, Kes, why do you keep staring at me?
Uh-huh.
And then she tells her. And she says, she's like, yeah, that's kind of odd. She's like, I wonder what it means. You know, I wonder what the dream could mean. And so that night, Kes is a little apprehensive to go back to sleep, but she does, and then she wakes up, like she goes to sleep, and then she wakes up, and it's now nighttime in the desert world, and B'Elanna, and they're around a fire, and B'Elanna's still there. B'Elanna says, you were out for quite some time, and she's like, you just passed out, and Kes is like, what's going on? What's happening? She's like, what do you mean? What do you mean what's going on? Like, B'Elanna assumes that Kes knows what's going on.
Uh-huh.
She basically describes a situation where, you know, like very much TV episodic style where we get a lot of exposition. And she's like, you know, like B'Elanna says, like, you know, like, were you hit on the head? You know, like, are you getting sick? What's going on? And Kes is like, I have no memory of this. So she's like, this is the weirdest dream that I've ever had. She's like, this isn't a dream. And B'Elanna starts to explain. She's like, we've been here for 3 years. What do you mean? You don't remember the past 3 years? And then she describes that what happened was like throughout, as we, like, I'm not going to give you scene for scene, but she describes in this desert world, in this desert future, that it's been 3 years and that all we know is that there was some, like, Voyager tried to get home using some sort of new technology that they found. It's this weird thing that I kind of came up with while I was sleeping. By traveling through this corridor, you go back in time, but they figured out a way to do it so that they could get back home the day after they left.
Okay.
And so that's how they were able to rationalize attempting to do it, because they're like, okay, well, we're not really going to alter the timeline because they're going to loop back. So, like, whatever they do in the Delta Quadrant is still going to happen.
Uh-huh.
But they're going to be able to continue to live their lives from the day after they left. They'll just be a couple years older. Or a couple weeks or months older.
Okay.
So that's how they were able to rationalize it. But the thing is that something went wrong. And
of course it did.
Yeah. And they got flung out of subspace. And they were still in this wake, this subspace wake or whatever. And they crash landed on a planet and it decimated the atmosphere. It completely ruined the atmosphere and obliterated all of its cities. And there was a few survivors. And so it was the Voyager crew trying to survive against the survivors of the planet. Because, you know, like any kind of post-apocalyptic, you know, situation... They're raiders, you know, they're trying to survive, and the Voyager crew is trying to stay together, and there's hardly any of them left. Mm. And B'Elanna is saying, like, I haven't seen another Voyager crew member in over a year.
Jeez.
And so, like, it's very fragmented. And so the crux of the episode is that Kes realizes that this is not a dream. She is literally traveling into the future. Her mind is going out of her head and into her future body. And it's going back and forth in real time. So, like, these two timelines are connected and running forward on a parallel path. And so her brain can go backwards and forwards through unconsciousness.
Wicked.
And she doesn't realize that. She doesn't realize that it's not a dream until when she, the next time she goes back to our timeline, when they find this new piece of technology and then they have a staff meeting and they're like, oh, we could totally do this. And then Kes realizes, oh crap, this is like, this is what B'Elanna was describing. Like, I can't let this happen. You know, it's prolonged out and people are saying like, well, you know, like, okay, well, we'll try it. Like we'll just get some safety measures, you know, like Kes, this could still be a dream. You know, there's no proof that it's real, you know, and everything like that. So they're not really willing to believe Kes. And then so once she goes back to the desert world, she realized, like, she starts to gain more information. She tries to get more information. And then they find the downed Voyager.
Okay.
And then so Kes investigates and tries to find out more to prove to the people back home that it's actually a real thing. Anyway, like I said, I'm not going to go scene for scene, but Kes is able to go back and forth and convince them that it's a real deal, and she's able to prevent them from doing the maneuver. Like she does some sort of thing like Janeway does, where she sabotages it. And then it's not until after the sabotage where they realize that Kes was right all along. And then the end of the episode is her falling asleep and nothing happening.
Hmm. Okay. First reaction. This is a really cool story. It is not a season one, episode four story.
No, it's not.
Not at all. I mean, might even be risque for season two, but this is like season three material where you're going really epic. I mean, I'm almost thinking like the city even maybe be around before and after kind of mm-hmm. concept and time.
Right.
But I like it, and it's science fiction-y, and it's going to screw with your head, and it's fun, mm-hmm. and it's going to be intriguing. Not season one.
No.
Where you're still learning about these characters, and you're talking about getting home. And I mean, six episodes in was way too early for that, but four would be even worse. So that's my honest critique.
No, it's you're completely right. You know, like it's almost unrecognizable from time and again, but there's some of the same beats about, like, you know, Kes seeing the future and being able to affect the future. But I kind of combine Janeway and Kes, and mm-hmm. but you're right. Like, this is totally not a season one episode. Like, I don't even know if you would ever see this in Voyager, but it's fun to talk about.
I feel like you would later on, just definitely not in those early stages of the show, especially the early stages of the show when they were trying to find their footing and did not know these characters hardly at all.
Yeah.
But I do find it interesting that you chucked basically the whole story of time and again. And let's face it, it really isn't the greatest episode. It's really not, like, it's not that it's bad, but it's not good either.
Yeah.
It just sort of is there, and you really don't want that for a season one episode, and yet I find it incredibly interesting. I kept a lot of the basic framework of the story, and you did not. We took totally opposite ends, but that's why I love these rewrites. Sometimes we come from completely different areas of the field here.
Yeah.
It's great.
And that's why it's fun.
It
but
is.
That's our episode. That's our episode, folks. Those are our two takes. Let us know what you thought of our two takes, and also let us know what you would change in Time and Again. You can reach out to us on Twitter. You can find me at The Insane Robin,
and you can find me at Oh the Profanity, or you can write into the show, send us an email, and you can do that by going to trek.fm/contact and make sure you select To the Journey, and that arrives into our inboxes. But rewriting Time and Again isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, To the Journey! He tweets out, you know, like, hey, walking around with my mobile emitter, you know, hashtag blessed. You know, it's just, I'm sure that's what he's doing.
Oh, gosh. yep, he's taking photos of his holographic non-dinner.
The 602 Club.
And even the book started this way, and I remember reading the book and being like, what the F is going on? Because it's just such a strange scene, you know, this muggle caretaker in this house making tea, and you're like, what is happening? But really what's being set up is this bookend of Voldemort looming over everything and finally finding a way to return.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
It every chance they have to get him off the bridge of that ship and have him running around on some planet or shooting some guy or jumping on something, they do. And it's like, he's got that chair there. It looks really comfortable. Let's have him sit in it for a while and command a starship.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check everything out that you just heard about, and then some. We have so many shows on the network, and none of it is possible without the help of our fantastic folks on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/trekfm and consider becoming a monthly subscriber. That's what keeps this network afloat. And on TTJ, we have several associate producers in particular to thank for supporting us, and those lovely people are Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, Bruce Lish, Dante Hopkins, Brian Belisio, and Kay Janeway. Thank you guys so much for supporting TTJ in particular, but also the network as a whole. So, another rewrite in the can, Tristan. How about that?
That's right. Episode rewrite in the can. We're done, and we're moving forward. And next week, we're gonna be in Vegas, baby! So
Vegas!
You're gonna get an episode for the first time ever with Shar and I in the same room together at the same time.
Oh my God, it's going to happen. We are going to record sometime, somewhere, when we are in Vegas. We're not completely sure on the details of that yet, but it is going to be recorded for all posterity. So be on the lookout for that. And until then, this has been To the Journey. To the Journey!